Government influences every aspect of our lives, from determining what types of food we eat to the water we drink, from how we make a living to how much we can make from that living, from where we live to where we will be buried. And that is why it is so important for each of us to participate in the civic and political process, so we can choose the people who will make these critical decisions and ensure that our voices are represented.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Fortunately, the United States of America is a country where its citizens can determine who represents them in government. Join me as I talk to Georgia State Representative Donna McLeod, who is committed to inspiring members of her community, as well as citizens across this nation, to participate in their government. Representative McLeod also emphasizes the importance of being an educated voter who holds our officials accountable. As you know, the midterm elections are quickly approaching, so now is the time to get involved. Representative McLeod is a Georgia State representative representing Gwinnett County in Georgia. A woman of many talents, Representative McLeod is also a chemical engineer and quality assurance consultant. So welcome to the Empowerment Zone, Representative McLeod.
Thank you so much, Ramona. I'm a Dr. Houston. Thank you so much for having me.
Please call me Ramona. Thank you very much. Well, I'm excited to have you today. We live in a moment where it's so important that we be well-informed citizens about government and politics and political empowerment and what we need to do individually as well as collectively as a community to really be engaged in the civic process. And so I'm happy that you're here. I'm proud of all the great work that you do as a state representative of Georgia, and very pleased that you would accept the invitation to be on the show.
Absolutely.
So could you, I've already given the audience a little bit about you, but I'd also like you to share a little bit about yourself personally and professionally so that our audience can get to know you.
My journey first, I born in Kingston, Jamaica, and grew up in Ontario, Canada. I am a mom. I am a grandmother as well. My grandson is 6 years old. I went to college in Canada. I'm a chemical engineer by profession. And I got in the whole political arena back in 2004, mostly. Actually, when I came here initially, there was that big issue with, I came in 1998, so 2000 was the election of George W. Bush. And then Al Gore, and that whole election got into a kerfuffle, and it didn't seem fair that this election was being decided by a court system. So I was actually in Florida in 2000. I was here a year and a half, kind of protesting against that whole process. And then in 2004, this young gentleman comes up on the stage at the DNC. His name was Barack Obama. And he spoke, and I thought, wow, if he ever ran for president, I would definitely want to be on that side of the fence. And 2007, he announced running. So I, from that point on, starting 2008, I used to drive from Gwinnett County down to Atlanta to canvass for him. And a lot of people forget he wasn't the favorite person at that time. Mm-hmm. I had enough doors slammed in my face to let me know that, because at that time it was the former first lady, Hillary Clinton, that a lot of folks wanted to go with. Eventually they saw what I saw in then Senator Barack Obama. And of course, he became president in 2012. I was the national director for photo outreach for Black women for Obama. By the way, I'm at this point in time, I'm not a citizen. I am still a green card holder. I decided to get my citizenship in the early part of 2012, but unfortunately, it didn't get through until after the election. So never got an opportunity to actually vote for the president, President Obama. But eventually, I didn't stop my grassroots organizing. I actually registered over 30,000 people in Gwinnett County. And a lot of people, you know, today Gwinnett looks a lot different, but that up until 2018, there was it was lacking in representation of people of color. Mm-hmm. So that was a hard fight. You know, had to fight for Sunday voting, extended early voting. You know, I was instrumental in all of those things, but also getting people to put their name on the ballot so we could start seeing just what kind of county we have. And as you know, Gwinnett County now is the most diverse county yes. in the state of Georgia.
Yes.
And
yes.
probably the second most diverse county in the Southeast. Mm-hmm. So we are really a county that everybody's watching. 2015, I was asked, in 2016, I was asked to run for the district I now represent, 105. I lost that race by 222 votes.
Wow.
Even after it was gerrymandered, and it was gerrymandered. So they literally, in 2015, changed the lines to make it more difficult for a Democrat to win, a member of the Democratic Party to win that election. I lost by 222 votes, but I didn't stop. What I did was I decided I was going to create a campaign in 2017. And what it was a thank you campaign. And the reason why I called it a thank you campaign was because 2,100 people didn't vote in 2016 from frustration for whatever reason. And those are the 2,100 people that we targeted that in 2017. We knew they didn't vote, but we wanted them to know I only lost by 222 votes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So in 2018, when I ran again, I won by a margin of almost over 4,000 votes more than my opponent.
Wow.
So the 2,100 people came up plus more. And then I was up for re-election in 2020, and I got was re-elected by almost 8,000 more votes than my opponent. So, you know, the people of District 105 have really put a lot of confidence in me, and I'm grateful to them for showing me that degree of confidence. And so for me, you know, the reason why I've chosen this topic is really to empower people to know their power in a republic, in a representative democracy, as long as you pay taxes. And that does not have to only be income tax. You pay sales tax. You pay fees. As long as you are contributing to this fiber of your cities, your counties, your state, and your country, you deserve a return on investment. And I want people to look at politics in that sense, in that framework, that because you pay taxes, you should demand a return on your investment.
That you have a powerful story, and thank you so much for sharing it with us and moving on into the conversation about power and empowerment. And to let our audience know, yes, if you pay taxes, that is an investment and you should get a return on your investment. A lot of people are outside of the political and civic process because they feel like they don't have power, but each of us do have power. So how do you convince people to get engaged, those who have been formally engaged and just feel frustrated with the system, as well as those that have been disengaged and have never really embraced government and politics as a part of their their lifestyle?
So first of all, you know, when you come from being a non-citizen to becoming a citizen, which is something when you're a non-citizen, you have to actually pay a price, right? I paid $680 for the application process. That doesn't include all the running around you have to do. And then, you know, I read the Constitution. You have to take a test. You don't know what you're going to be asked, and you have to pass that test in order to get become a citizen. So that hurdle alone for someone like me, I can't urge enough how I push on people that are born here to not take that right for granted. Secondly, the whole idea of this government, this republic, represented not, is that it requires your participation. It doesn't work without participation. Mm-hmm. It is useless to say I'm frustrated, but yet you give up on participating, because mm-hmm. Even if you're not participating, somebody else is. Mm-hmm. And so you're not being there is you are empowering somebody else to be there and make decisions on your behalf. And because it's participatory, you're doing voting is only your first step in the process, right? If you're born here, you automatically get that right to vote at the age of 18. For those of us who aren't born here, that's just not automatic for us. But your first process is once you turn 18, it's the vote. But the other part is to actually keep the people that you elect accountable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can't just be done and vote and done. And I understand your life get busy, but understand this: politics is in every aspect of your life. Mm-hmm. The actual idea of politics is the persuasion part, right? So when I run for office, I'm trying to persuade you that I'm the best candidate for the job. And, I'm asking you to have a leap of faith and vote for me. But the other part is governing, right? Is after I'm elected, then I have to govern. How do I govern? I'm going to govern by what I'm being pushed to do. Mm-hmm. And if the people participate, then I'm pushed to do what the people's asking me to. Obviously there are some things that are realistic and some things that are unrealistic, because if we don't have a law that exists currently for a certain thing, you have to make that law. And what is a law? It's an opinion. It's an opinion that everybody comes to the table with. And we also try to remind people that even though we are elected, we have colleagues from different parts of the state, different parts of the country. And so people come with their already beliefs or their needs, right? Because what is good in the metro area, in the Atlanta area, tends to worry about if we're gonna get a signal on our phone. Mm-hmm. But down south, that is broadband is not as widespread. So you've got a lot of the representatives from the southern part of Georgia that are coming in, and their desire is to get some of those things that we already take for granted up here. So even though you've seen things, you have a single vote, but every vote as an elected official affects every single person in the state of Georgia. Just like if you're in Congress, every vote you make affects all 350 mm-hmm. million people in the United States. So it's also a very conscious thing when you're a representative to make sure that what you're doing is not impacting people across your state or across your country negatively. And so a lot of people tend to kind of get conflate politics and governing together. I'm not in politics. Well, you don't have to be a politician, but you want to be a part of the process to elect that person who's going to govern on your behalf and be your voice. And that's the real thing.
So let's talk about that, about participation and holding our elected officials accountable. What suggestions, like for people who are not engaged, what suggestions would you give them to participate beyond, to your point, beyond just voting? How can they be engaged on a continual process as well as hold our elected officials accountable?
So one of the things is, not after you vote, really truly know who you voted for. Take a list, and actually there's a lot of resources online. You just like house.gov, house.ga.gov, Georgia House, Google it, go find those elected officials, get their contact information. It's as simple as even sending an email and saying, hey, this is happening here. What resources are there for me? Or, hey, I don't think you're doing this right. Or I didn't like this. You don't have to necessarily watch all our votes, but there, our voting records are also available to you. But just letting your elected official know, first of all, knowing what district you live in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What precinct you vote in.
Mm-hmm.
Who was elected to be your voice in all the aspects? Because you got count, you've got your city elections, and people dismiss that. But you pay tax. If you live in a city limit, you actually pay taxes in order for that city to run. And some of these cities collect a huge amount of taxes and are actually have huge budgets and have a lot of resources. And there are resources that you just have to reach out if you need something to find out what that city might offer. Your county level government, you've got commissioners and CEOs mm-hmm. that basically represent you and collect money from at the county level, right? At the city level, usually it's usually taxed in your utility bills and all of that stuff for your city. Your county is usually, your taxes usually come from income, partly income, purchasing, school taxes come from your property taxes. So everybody's got a little bit of money from every little part mm-hmm. of you. And then your state, we collect income tax, mm-hmm. sales tax and mm-hmm. also fees. So if you apply for a business and you pay a fee, that's, we get a part of that. If you were pulled over by a state police, and the same in the police department also at the city and the county, each of those operate in their different ways. So the county police department is managed by your county commissioners. Your city police is managed by your mayors and your mm-hmm. council people, and then the state troopers. And if you get pulled over and get a ticket, that is revenue. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. additional revenue that the state collects. And in the state of Georgia, it is a $27 billion with a B budget that we have. That's bigger than some countries in the
mm-hmm.
world.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's huge. And so how we spend that money is very important. I have introduced a piece of legislation to stop paying the $127 million that we pay to private prisons. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, if you want to be a private prison, then you need to be operating as an independent business, not depending on the taxpayer dollars. And mm-hmm. And it also encourages the school to prison pipeline.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is a key issue in the community, is the privatization of prisons, which yes. is really a critical issue that our society, our state, as well as our country really needs to address. So let me say one more thing
mm-hmm. about that with the school to prison. I also introduced some legislation to look at the formula, how we fund public schools. The last time that formula was updated was 1987.
Wow.
I look at Gwinnett County, the county I live in right now, it doesn't look anything like it did in 1987, and the population has exploded. We are nearly at 1 million people. And back in 1987, I would think Gwinnett County was probably maybe a little bit over 200,000 people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
you're looking at a completely different county, yet we're still operating. And that's the largest, by the way, that's the largest part of our budget in the state of Georgia, is the funding for education.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing it right.
Yeah. And to your point is that we do have to revisit many of our strategies and update them to be relevant and be functional and be effective for today. So we appreciate you introducing that legislation, and mm-hmm. hopefully we'll be able to address that issue of education, because education, of course, influences the prison to school to prison pipeline, and we really need to address that.
And we know that kids, if they're not reading by grade three, we're probably creating that a more conducive pipeline.
Yeah,
like we're making it easier.
Yep, they say by fourth grade, the research shows that by fourth grade, the powers that be are determining how many prison beds they need. Yes. So that is clearly an issue that we must address in our society, especially in the fact that we have more people incarcerated than any country in the world in terms of percentage of population, and that is detrimental to everyone. So let's move on to the topic of misinformation and disinformation is one of the key areas that you wanted to discuss. We live in a moment where social media rules the land and people get their information in their own silos and not really getting real truth in many ways from their news sources. So what is your, as a representative, what is your perspective on misinformation and disinformation?
So first of all, you know, politics is running right through all this disinformation and misinformation, just clear lies, and in some ways just lies. And as a science person myself, it's been very hard to see people literally turn a virus, which causes a disease, into a political issue that's killing people. And so this disinformation, misinformation, and lies is actually killing people now. And I think, you know, social media has its pluses, obviously, and its minuses. But I think those of us that have the power and the microphone to really speak truth should have done that from the onset. It didn't happen. We know that 2020, we know that the president at the time was basically playing this as a political issue rather than an issue that affected the people he's leading to as a health crisis. And, you know, even with the CRT, the lies, the misinformation around critical race theory, a subject that's actually taught in colleges, but truth is should never be politicized. The truth, especially history, it has already happened. The proof is already there. It is odd to me that the folks that are doing all of this want you to accept that you're not supposed to you're not equal, or you shouldn't have equity in our society, but yet they want to ensure that they have the power and keep the power. We've just went through a huge issue down at the Capitol with our school system and redistricting. Again, all about power, right? Not about fairness or equity. This is all about power, in which one single senator here in Gwinnett County wanted to basically change the makeup of our school boards and our board of commissioners strictly on power lines, and then lie about it. It's not even like it's misinformation. That's too nice a word. Lie is really what it is. And when your lies are killing people, I don't mince words anymore. You're killing people with lies. And that is unacceptable, especially when you know better. I thought that in some way science had already been settled in a lot of ways. I mean, we know there are microscopic organisms. We know that. And have been taught about that. So it's been bizarre to hear people talk about the virus as if you're infringing on my personal rights. And the virus doesn't care. It doesn't read your constitution. It doesn't read our books. It doesn't say Americans have a better, you know, it's much better than Europeans. No, the virus says I need to survive and I want to live. So your body's perfect for me. I don't care which body, just give me a body. And as soon as it enters each of our bodies, it mutates. It does take on different chemical properties because of our bodies being a little bit different from each one of us. And so it mutates. It's been just an absolute bizarre situation for me. And I've watched the Department of Health, and back in 2020, just literally play as if this is a political decision making when it comes to this issue of this virus. It is a health issue, period. It's a health issue because we know that, because people die.
So when we look at this whole issue of misinformation and disinformation, particularly concerning the virus, a lot of people are misinformed. They believe what they want to believe. How do you think our society or our community. Let's just leave it. Let's focus on Georgia. We have audience around the country, but how can we start moving toward solutions in addressing this matter of misinformation and disinformation, and really moving toward helping people understand what to believe and what not to believe?
So I think, you know, just the fact that we did elect a new president, that was a very helpful in just making sure the narrative isn't about, a political thing, mm-hmm. and just making decisions based on protective equipment, getting that vaccine out there, making sure people can get it in their arms. I think that was a good start. I do think that it's important that those of us with a microphone, that we speak mm-hmm. truth all the time, mm-hmm. no matter what situation you're in. No, don't be afraid because somebody, you know, said something out loudly and then they think they're right, that you don't say anything. I don't want people getting in big confrontation, but especially if you have respect and other people respect you, you know, it is okay to say, hey, I know this to be true, and this is what has happened. Or I've personally had the vaccine and I didn't have any, you know, reaction, or if I had a reaction, be honest about it and just tell them. And then, you know, really, I think it's on all of us. And believe me, those of us, majority of people have the knowledge, and they've been silent. I think mm-hmm. the silent majority needs to stop being the silent majority and becomes the majority in speaking truth. And I think that's changing. It needs to change some more. People need to be very honest with friends and family. You're going to have family, and you're going to have members of your family. But you know what? If you're not going to get the vaccine, you got to wear that mask. You know, you got to keep your distance from people. And so I think having that honest conversation, especially about this virus, is so important that we who know better must do better.
So true. So true. When we look at leadership throughout the community, it's not just elected officials. It's leaders in all types of settings. All of us have voices. And like you stated, each leader has to use their platform to speak truth. We're in the holiday season now. Families are getting together. If you're a leader in your family, you need to use your influence to speak truth to your family members and not cow down to misinformation and disinformation. People need to be educated about the issues, educated about this virus, and make good decisions. Because the decisions you make as an individual concerning this virus affects everyone. Because when you make choices that are not good for others, you can potentially have an effect on others. And that's why truth is so important, and that each and every individual should use their power and influence to help others see the truth.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. Everybody thinks you have to somehow, stand on a stage or have a microphone in your hand to have influence. No. Long before I even ran for office, I was mm-hmm. influential. I started a nonprofit organization that teaches civic engagement long before I even thought about that. So you don't have to be elected. You don't have to have a microphone. You don't have to be on stage. You just have to command that kind of respect, and that people will actually listen to you, because a leader will always have people following them. That's the whole idea of leadership, right? And hopefully you lead with a sense of moral compass.
Yes.
That is something I think that a good leader will do, is to lead with a moral compass.
Yes. We're so proud of the leadership that you exhibit in the community of Gwinnett, as well as in the state of Georgia. And we really appreciate the work that you do, Representative Donna McLeod. And it is great to have you on the Empowerment Zone.
Let me just also say, I am running for Congress. I'm running for the 7th Congressional District.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Visit me at www.donnamcleod.com. That's MCLEOD and DONNA, MCLEOD.com. And please go there and visit me. I'm running because, I believe that this republic has not yet exercises full potential, mm-hmm. and it can, and representative democracy will have to work, because I think it's still one of the best way of governing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. We wish you the best on your endeavor to run for Congress. Representative Donna McLeod for Congress.
Thank you.
So now we are here with our college strategies portion of our interview. Representative McLeod, can you please tell us what college or colleges did you attend? What were your major or majors and the degrees you earned? And then give our audience those strategies for college success.
So I went to college in Canada, Humber College, and I graduated with a chemical engineering degree. And what I will say about strategy, I think first of all, especially nowadays with so much information out there and people being able to, I think choosing something you love to do is probably number one, since you're gonna do it a long time, and be passionate about it, be passionate about what you do, and really stick your mind into saying, I'm gonna do this in a way that I learn everything I'm learning, not just, I'm here, oh my gosh, I just gotta get this, I gotta get out of school, I gotta get out there and work. You know, also entrepreneurial thing when you come out of school. You know, most of us, when we were kids, especially Black kids, taught to go to school and get a job. I think it's important to also rethink that kind of concept and say, you know what? How can I make a job too? And a lot of people are doing that as well. So I think being passionate, really focusing on what you want to do for a long time, because if you live long enough, you'll be doing work a long time. And so do something you really like to do, because you don't want to be miserable. And over my lifetime, I've met a lot of miserable people because mm-hmm. they didn't end up doing the things that they wanted to do. And life gets in the way sometimes. Mm-hmm. So stay focused.
This is
be intentional.
Love your advice. Choose a career path that you really enjoy. Be passionate. Be mentally focused and committed to the process, your educational mm-hmm. process. But most of all, I really like that idea about rethinking the purpose of your college education, that is not just to get a job, but broaden it to include entrepreneurial opportunities. And like you said, most African-American and Latino communities, our communities, we tend to focus on get an education to go get a job and not really opening our mind to other types of opportunities. So
Be intentional.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Empowerment Zone. It is great to have you.
Thank you, Ramona. Thank you for having me, and thank you, audience, for listening. Appreciate you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.